Welcome to the 11KBW podcast on parental and paternity leave by Harini Iyengar. This talk was given at the 11KBW Employment Law Conference on the 14th of May 2015. For more podcasts and information, please visit 11kbw.com.
Good afternoon. As you probably know, shared parental leave came into operation in the UK on the 5th of April. I'd love to say that these are some snaps from what happens in my house whilst I'm at work or giving you a talk, but actually they're not, and I've collected them from a Swedish photographer's project called, he's called Johan Barvman, and the photo series is Swedish Dads. And you may know that since 1974, I think, in Sweden, working parents have been entitled to 480 days leave per child, and out of that leave, 60 days belongs to the male. And he uses it or he loses it. And some people think that's what's prompted Swedish men to behave in this way. Today I'm going to invite you to ask yourself a philosophical question about the rights that working mothers have and the rights that working fathers have. And I'm going to compare those rights. And I say that exercise takes you to the heart of a really controversial question between the feminism of equality and the feminism of difference. And I don't offer you answers to that question, but obviously the feminism of equality advocates a model in which we try to get identical rights for working men and working women. And the feminism of difference says there are some things inherently different about men and women, and there are some feminine things that men could even learn from, and that we should look forward to a model that's more diverse and different from the model of equality. So I'm going to be asking you, to what extent in the 21st century should parents be given equal rights to care for their children, now that a man in this country, in theory, is entitled to take the whole of his child's first year off work to care for that child? But to what extent does this new regime we have of shared parental leave ignore some physical realities of women's experiences of getting pregnant, being pregnant, childbirth, and breastfeeding? And against this abstract philosophical issue, I hope I'm going to give you some guidance on how employers and employees in real life are going to manage these issues in the workplace. The statutory framework is extremely complicated. I've listed just the most relevant ones there in paragraph 2 of my paper. And really, we've got this plethora of statutory provisions and regulations because the origins lie in Social Security and sick pay legislation. Now, you may think it's a very long time ago in Webber and O that we are having this discussion about the concept of comparing a pregnant woman with a man on sick leave, but those were the foundations of our regime. And even now we've got a radically new system of shared parental leave. These are still the foundations, and I think some of the issues that Chris alluded to that don't seem to quite make sense arise because of this foundation in Social Security sick pay legislation. It's also important to bear in mind that our system is modelled on a heterosexual couple, a man and a woman who are married and have their own biological child. And if you're here this morning, you'll have heard Adrian's views in his talk about disability discrimination about the mother who lacked a uterus. And it's important to bear in mind that in modern society, in most workplaces, there are very many employees who don't fit into this model of a heterosexual married couple with their own child. Don't forget single parents, don't forget gay employees, and some of them you won't even know that they're gay, civil partners, people are getting children from adoption, including older children, and also parents who are commissioning babies through surrogacy. I don't apologise, though, for using this language in my paper about he and she and the married couple, because that is the scheme in the legislation. And just in the philosophical indulgence, you might ask yourself why Parliament's made no attempt, for example, to introduce provisions that would be specifically useful to, say, an employee undergoing fertility treatment, an employee travelling abroad to adopt a baby or to bring home a baby commissioned by surrogacy, or an employee who is adopting a child of school age who may have different wishes in terms of maybe not finding a block of parental leave useful but rather wanting to be at home at school pickup. You also have to remember that not all workers with parental rights or seeking parental rights are employees. We've got agency workers, 0 hours workers, and self-employed workers who all have different kinds of parental rights. Now, in this legislative maze, I don't think it's fair to expect either managers or individual employees to know what the legal entitlements are. And I think any sizeable and well-resourced employer has got to have in place a policy on shared parental leave and paternity leave, which managers and team members can refer to, just as you would expect it to have a maternity policy in place. And because there have been so many changes in parental rights relatively recently, unfortunately, I think the reality is many decent-sized businesses just don't have an up-to-date policy in place at the moment. And the human resources team themselves may require some training before they're in a position to help. An additional feature is that in this very complicated area of law, a lot of the jargon is used colloquially and wrongly. So just to give one example, people talk about flexible working. To a lot of people, casually, they think that means mothers going part-time. And as you know, and I'll come on to explain, it's actually got a very specific and different meaning. It's not about mothers going part-time. Similarly, people talk about, oh, he's going to take paternity leave, and actually he might be taking shared parental leave, which is distinct from his entitlement to paternity leave. Another complication is that the periods of entitlement to statutory maternity or paternity or shared parental leave are different from the statutory entitlements to pay for those different kinds of leaves. Needless to say, money is a prime concern to workers who want to take time off to care for their children. And a lot of the stress associated with taking a break from work is about how the family is going to manage financially. And in an ideal world, managers would be able to take advice from HR, who've probably taken advice from you, and quickly reassure individuals or explain individuals what their entitlements to pay and leave are, because I think it's very disturbing for the individual to even think about finding out what the position is. There are some helpful websites that they might go onto, but a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. Where parental rights are mismanaged, I think I don't need to tell you that the risks are discontented workers, stressed workers, it can turn into sickness absence, it can turn into complaints about managers, complaints about senior managers, then it can turn into resignations and obviously litigation. And the other side of it, from a commercial point of view, is that you can be left with under-resourced teams in your workforce if you don't handle shared parental leave and parental entitlements properly. So I'm going to now take you through the array of rights that working parents now have. And they can use them singly, or as you commonly see in concatenation, which is a fancy way of saying they chain them different rights together to create the period of leave that they want to take. So starting off with early pregnancy, pregnant employees, as you know, have a statutory right to take paid time off work in order to attend antenatal appointments under section 55 of the ERA. This right is available to women who do and who do not proceed to full term with their pregnancies. Obviously, if managers become aware at an early stage of someone's pregnancy, confidentiality is a key expectation. Women obviously tend to experience tiredness, maternity-related health problems, and sometimes, unfortunately, miscarriage. I think Kate Middleton has been a high-profile example of someone with hyperemesis gravidarum, which is severe morning sickness. So there's a range, obviously, of women who have a very healthy and discreet early pregnancy towards women who experience miscarriage or severe ill health. Now, where the woman does have paid time off for maternity-related sickness, or if there's a miscarriage, there are various statutory rights that she has to that time off. And depending on the stage of the pregnancy, she may have an opportunity to start her maternity leave early, probably not under early pregnancy. Now, I've done a sort of his and hers set of slides. I didn't copy the BIS example of the pink bottles you might have seen, the pink bottles of pink baby milk and blue baby milk that they've used in their illustrations for shared parental leave. But I think it's quite easy for you to see. I've put the woman's entitlement on this side and the man's entitlement on that side. So what right does the new dad have? He's got unpaid time off to go with his partner to up to 2 antenatal appointments. Now, if there's an abnormality, obviously, he may find himself under strain and wish to take a lot more time off. Whatever time extra time he gets off in a difficult early pregnancy is probably going to be unpaid compassionate leave that he's negotiated with his employer, or unpaid time off work for dependents that he's negotiated with his employer. If his wife has miscarried, he may be able to say she's in need of my care, as a dependent and take time off under that. Coming on to late pregnancy, there's no qualifying period now for maternity leave, so there's no minimum length of service anymore to take the leave. Obviously, maternity pay is slightly different, and there are qualification requirements. She has a flexible start date to her maternity leave, so if she's sick, she may have an opportunity to start maternity leave early. Now, depending on the individual situation, some women are really happy with the opportunity to start their maternity leave early, as soon as their doctor says. Other women, for financial reasons generally, are very bitter about the way that those rules push them to start their maternity leave. She also has a very flexible length of leave. The absolute minimum that a woman in this country can take is obviously 2 weeks. But she can take up to a year's leave at her own say-so. And she's restricted to one continuous block of leave. And depending on your attitude, that's to her advantage because she can choose any length up to 52 weeks, or it's inflexible because she has to do it all in one go. What does the dad get? Well, he does have a qualifying period for paternity leave. It's not as of right because he's going to become a father. And again, if there are problems with illness or problems with the baby's health, with the mother's illness or the baby's health, he's again going to have to resort to unpaid compassionate leave and unpaid time off work for dependents that he has to negotiate with his employer. Coming on to maternity leave and paternity leave, as I've said, the woman can take up to 52 weeks leave. Under the statutory regime, she's entitled to 6 weeks of that leave at 90% pay. The man gets either 1 or 2 weeks paternity leave at the grand sum of £139.58. The woman has a wide choice as to the start date of her pregnancy if she's healthy. So some women, especially if they've got other children, if they're feeling very tired, will choose to start their maternity leave earlier. Other women, typically who are very fit and healthy, will choose to start their maternity leave in the last minute, and they'll say, I want to take the maximum opportunity to earn full pay while I'm fit, and I also want to spend the maximum amount of time at home with my new baby rather than moping around on my own in late pregnancy. She must take leave at the time of the birth, 2 weeks for most women, 4 weeks if she's a factory worker, and she can't get out of that, and you can't, as an employer, allow her to work during that time. And she has what I've glibly called a long-lasting protection from discrimination. So as soon as she becomes pregnant, she's protected under the Equality Act, under the protected characteristic of pregnancy and maternity. And that protection extends all the way through to the end of her maternity leave. And as I've said, it's her prerogative how long that is going to be within her option to take maternity leave. What does the dad get? He gets, as I said, either 1 or 2 weeks. He can't take less than a week. He can't take more than 2 weeks. He can't get paid 90% as of right, although some employers will offer that on a contractual basis. The dates are rigidly restricted. I don't know if any of you have had to look at it, but it's a nightmare because, as you know, human babies don't tend to come on a timetable unless it's a planned cesarean. And many fathers have protested about, without goodwill from the employer, you can end up missing the time that the baby's born, even though you've planned ahead and you've booked your paternity leave in accordance with what your midwife said, which can be frustrating for some men. Equally, it can be frustrating for employers because some dads have got wise to that and they've decided, oh, my best bet is to not book my paternity leave and I'm going to be waiting for that call from the hospital so that I can start my 2 weeks on that day. And that can be difficult for businesses because they've got someone in the workforce who's quite tense and he's about to shoot off, but he's not yet gone. And he has what I've called a narrow protection for detriment, and I don't need to say any more about that after you've just heard from Chris. So coming on now to shared parental leave, which is the new thing. It's the woman's prerogative when she ceases her maternity leave under the new scheme and starts parental leave. So she still has the opportunity to earn the 6 weeks at 90% of income before that shared parental leave starts. By contrast, the dad doesn't have that option under the statute. He can only ever get £139.58 per week. Now, I have heard that some employers, for example, schools and accountancy practices and law firms in particular, and I think there's sometimes those occupations where you tend to get what Boris Johnson calls assortative mating. In other words, people who do the same type of job tend to marry each other in certain professions. A lot of those businesses have chosen to offer on a contractual basis equivalent rights for males and females. And I've heard a few instances where the man has now said, typically because he happens to be the higher earner, which is often the case given the pay gap in this country, I'm going to take the first 6 weeks at 90%. What can be done? I mean, depending on what the contract says, probably not a lot, although, of course, she has to take her 2 weeks compulsory leave. The woman can choose when to end the maternity leave and switch over to shared parental leave if she chooses to do so. The man has to wait for his wife to make her decision. Each of them gets the same amount of statutory shared parental pay at the fixed rate, and each of them can take up to 3 blocks of leave. Now, the differences: self-employed mothers can share their leave with employed fathers. And the justification for that is, well, she's born the baby and she's paid her national insurance contributions. What she gets is technically statutory maternity allowance. Self-employed dads can't share with employed mothers, even though he would have paid his national insurance contributions. Mothers with unemployed husbands can still take shared parental leave. Now, what happens there is that she can't literally share it with him, but she can take blocks of leave. So previously, if she were on maternity leave, she would have to take a continuous block of leave. She could now say, even though I have a house husband, and he's not literally going to be earning my pay during my leave, he's going to be at home unpaid, she could say, I'm going to pop back to work and deal with a big case, or I'm going to come back for the spring term, first half, and then I'm going to go off again. Fathers whose wives stay at home cannot take shared parental leave, and they do not have that opportunity. Each of the parents on shared parental leave can take up to 20 keeping in touch days. Now, it seems to me, depending on how the dates worked out, that a smart couple, and I think every couple who's about to have a baby and has got the wherewithal to grapple with their employer's policy, if not the regulations, is going to be doing a lot of calculations. And I've heard that those teacher couples do it on a spreadsheet. You can take up to 10 keeping in touch days during your maternity leave, which gives you the opportunity to earn full pay. So depending on the generosity of your employer's contractual scheme or the stinginess of the public sector statutory scheme, it may be your opportunity to earn 2 weeks of full pay at a time when the family income's dropped. Again, if each partner takes 20 keeping in touch days, that gives you a total of 10 weeks at full pay. And I think it's when people cotton on to that, employers are going to have to be more aware of it. I think it's quite disappointing that we rarely see statements of principle or policy in parental leave, in maternity policies, where the employer says, we encourage women to come back on this basis for keeping in touch days. There's very little in the statute about it, and indeed, the days don't have to be paid, but I've noticed that common practice seems to be to offer full pay. And obviously the minimum would be to offer the minimum wage, although you may not wish to insult your staff in that way. And they can share a total of up to 50 weeks of leave together. Now, coming on to breastfeeding, the NHS recommends that women in this country should breastfeed exclusively for 26 weeks, and the World Health Organization recommends breastfeeding for up to 2 years. There are various public health reports indicating that we ought to encourage more breastfeeding in the country. It's difficult to say quite how an employer is to do that prior to the stage at which a woman returns to work. And yet, the spirit behind the shared parental leave regime is to try, I think, to reduce the time that women are spending out of the workforce, because with the entitlement to maternity leave extending up to 52 weeks and the opportunity to add on parental leave, in many workplaces, it became the norm for women to take 13 months of leave. And I think that it's an attempt by the coalition government to reduce the time that women are spending away. And so it follows from that one can expect to see more women returning to work during the period in which they're being encouraged exclusively to breastfeed. But we have no specific legal protections for breastfeeding mothers at work. If you're interested in this, I've written a paper about it, which discusses rights to breastfeeding and rights that working mothers have in regard to breastfeeding. So I'll move on for that. It seems to me that the only protections that breastfeeding working mothers have exist under health and safety rules, discrimination rules, and protection from harassment rules. Somewhat unsurprisingly, there's no special protection for fathers of breastfed babies. Other types of leave that working parents make use of include parental leave, and these next set of rights are identical for both fathers and mothers. And just to refresh your memory, after a qualifying period of a year, a working parent can take up to 18 weeks of unpaid leave for the purposes of caring for a child. It has to be taken in blocks of a week. and you have the right to return to the same job if you take it for up to 4 weeks. If you take the full 18 weeks, then you have a right equivalent to the right to return after extended maternity leave. So, in other words, the same job, or if it's not reasonably practicable, to suitable alternative employment. And then we have another gender-neutral right, which I've controversially put in here, which is holiday leave. Now, as we know from the European Court, holiday leave is for the purpose of having a rest, and it's not to do with being sick or having a rest in bed, and it's not to do with looking after children, one must infer. But we know the reality is many working parents, especially two-couple working parents, often are taking consecutive periods of holiday for the purpose of caring for their children. We don't have any case law or commentary about what an employer is supposed to do if they become aware of the fact. And I'm not yet aware of any case law suggesting that looking after children in their holidays is a kind of work, although, as you've seen from the illustrations, you may think that it is a kind of work. Time off for dependents, my next gender-neutral right. Employees are allowed to take unpaid, reasonable time off work to deal with family emergencies. And the type of situations covered are a dependent who's ill, who's injured, who gives birth, who dies, where a childcare arrangement is unexpectedly disrupted, and that right is gender neutral. And the final right is the right to request flexible working. Any employee can now request flexible working arrangements. It's not linked to status of being a working parent, and it can be a request to vary hours, times, or locations of work, and it will be a permanent change to the contract. And I'd like to encourage you to talk to your clients, employers and employees, about whether it's really necessary to have a permanent change of contract, because quite often these requests are made by somebody who's returning to work. And on further exploration, it's often the case that somebody's worried about, for example, a settling in period at a new nursery or cessation of breastfeeding or some rearrangement of their duties. And quite a lot of employers and employees have found a temporary solution or a phased return can work better. And I think that the keeping in touch days in particular allow employers and employees now a new opportunity to have a phased return to work by making use of those days, rather than necessarily having to change the contract of employment permanently. So my conclusion is, I'd like you to think about the feminism of equality and the feminism of difference. I'd like you to think about how couples and employees are now going to be managing and thinking about their finances during the period of leave to look after a child, and how they're going to arrange it between the two of them. And also on a broader level, whether it's now more socially and culturally acceptable for men to do childcare and to be seen to do childcare in the United Kingdom. And weighed against that, we've got the questions that you have already been mentioned in Chris's paper about why does maternity leave have this privileged status? To some extent, it's for immutable biological reasons, but not all mothers have given birth to the child that they're caring for. And again, I've dealt with this in an article that I've referred you to in paragraph 39. I think there's a very interesting discussion or argument or litigation exercise that may or may not occur in the future, where we look at the British law, which I think, even with the introduction of shared parental leave, is still based on a model where childcare is women's work, it's the woman's maternity leave, and she's now given the opportunity to maybe share that with the father. Whereas the European model, I think, is much more based on a short period of compulsory maternity leave of 2 weeks or 4 weeks for factory workers, focused on the woman's biological condition, and that's what the European Court has said in CD&ST, which is the case of surrogacy. And it's also salutary for those of us who work in the United Kingdom to remember that under EU law, the period of maternity leave, the minimum which must be granted, is 4 months, and it's in domestic law that we've got way beyond the 4 months up to the period of 52 weeks for the female. And I think that that illustrates perhaps a philosophical conflict. I think the UK law at present is based on arguably feminism of difference, where the female is given primary childcare responsibility and the male is given a secondary responsibility. And one might say that the European model is more on a feminism of equality model, where the woman is given narrow biological-based protections as a person who's been pregnant and given birth, and then other parents, be they fathers or mothers through surrogacy or mothers through adoption, are given a second set of protections. And I think we need to be asking ourselves, as employers and employees, why we as a government or as a society or as a family or as a workplace are preferring different models. And the final thing I want to say is that what struck me the most is how generous certain private sector employers have been, especially, as I said, accountancy, law and schools, in giving fathers enhanced contractual rights way beyond the statutory scheme. And we have to see whether these are taken up and then whether they're affordable. I think that's got a potential to be far more radical as a voluntary step taken by some employers than any of these legislative rights, and whether they will now influence the public sector and the smaller businesses when men start to say, my brother did such and such, such and such, why can't I? So I'll leave you with these grand questions to consider.